Welcome back, Sports to the Max, News Talk 830 WCCO. NBA draft coming up on Thursday. Let's talk to somebody that has lived this with his son. Larry Suggs is the father of Jalen Suggs. Lottery pick, of course, last year. Also the former teammate of Chet Holmgren. Could they be teammates again in Orlando? We don't know. But I always think, what is it like as you head towards the draft and you're going to find out where you live, to an extent, how much money you're going to get paid? All that stuff is going to happen with just the blink of an eye on Thursday. Joining us on that John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline is Larry Suggs. Larry, thanks for joining us. How are you, my man?
Hey, Mike. It's always good to be on your show.
What was it like last year at this time as you approached the draft and you hear, you know, different, he might go here, he might go there, he might, somebody might trade for him. What's that like to live that?
You know, it's a great feeling, Mike. I got to start with that. You know, my family, what we did was we just took it day by day. So we just said, hey, could we go to the first five or six picks? So we had everybody just look for different places. What was the nicest area, you could say, around each city? Looked at some different schools for his sisters and stuff like that. You know, we kind of took it easy, but it was a very exciting time.
And so did Orlando come up often in your discussions at that time? Did you think there was a good chance he'd end up there, or didn't you know?
Yeah, you know, we're basketball fans, so we've always watched the draft, and we know it can change in the blink of an eye if somebody else goes before you. So we were prepared, sort of as our family, that we could go anywhere. I want to say in the top 10, you know, is what we were told for the whole year.
And then you moved down there as well, you and your wife and kids, at least part-time, right?
Yes. I'm a very good coach. I know a lot about basketball, but I'm a very good listener, too, so. A lot of people that have been in the business for a long time told me that it'd be best if I moved down there with them to make sure that first year goes well for them.
What was the first year like to live that with him?
It was great. You know, we told him that we were going to give him a space and let him grow up and be a young man, and that was one of the things that we had talked about as a family. So we stayed about a mile and a half away from him, but he has his own place, you know, and we have ours. And just like any typical kid, he goes out, hangs out, has some fun, and you know, he'll drift around the house and come in, eat dinner and stuff like that, and take off. And every once in a while, I'll do his laundry too, Mike.
Somebody has to, man. Okay, so yeah. but you also had an advantage in that you've run that Sizzle and the grassroots program for a long time, so you've been around a lot of basketball people, and you know what they're looking for, the profiles. How much did that help you? Because you already knew a lot of the basketball people that made things happen. And did that help a lot because they saw your son as somebody that had good street sense that way because he understood the makeup of the game?
Yeah. It helped out tremendously, me being involved heavily in youth basketball and just youth sports in general around the metro. So as we began our journey, we began meeting more and more people that are a little higher up than we were in the game of sports. And they kind of just kind of schooled us a little bit on what to do and what not to do. And we had great role models, too, that were in the city. You know, you got Derek Rubin, Khalid Alameen, and you got the Reed Travises and your Tyus Jones. You had so many people that came before us that we had already got to see and ask a lot of questions on the do's and don'ts of the NBA and stuff like that. And I think that we got very good answers from everybody to be able to put Jalen in the space that he's in right now.
Larry Suggs is our guest, and now it gets interesting because his high school teammate, Chet Holmgren, who also went to Gonzaga, obviously didn't play at the same time, is on the clock, as they say. What are you hearing, and what are the chances that he ends up in Orlando?
So, you know, obviously, you know, Chet, I've always told him, I said, just to be safe, you're a top five pick. So you don't have to feel that feeling of, hey, maybe if I don't go number one, it's a disappointment.
Wouldn't that be terrible, man, if you didn't go number one, you felt like you're a disappointment? I'm sorry, but go ahead.
So me and Chet laughed about that one. But I said, realistically, I said, you know, we'll keep it top five. But it sounds like, you know, he could go one or two right now. So I believe that he visited both places, and I believe both of them went well. So I told him, I said, it comes down to need, you know, and where they see you playing, what position on the floor and stuff like that.
So what advice do you give to him, having lived this, in terms of his interviews with teams, his workouts with teams? What advice were you able to give him?
I told him to just be patient. I said it's a beautiful thing. Me and Jalen and Chet and some of the fellas, we started this journey many moons ago. And I said, just enjoy the process and the ride. It's like it's so much fun if you just kind of just let it just kind of like hang out, let's be free, and just kind of just chill a little bit. So that's what he's kind of doing, you know. He just kicked back and relaxed, and then wherever the chips fall, you know, Chet said he'd be good at it. So, and I liked his response when he told me that. When you know, his spirits are high, you know, he's smiling and stuff like that. And I think it'll be a good place no matter where he goes.
Were you in New York last year for the draft? I don't remember now.
Yes, I was in New York for the draft.
Okay, so what is draft night like for Chet, and what is Jalen? I mean, do you go show up in a limo and somebody just brings you everywhere you need to go? What happens?
That sounds like in movies a little bit, you know. But no, it's a really chaotic day, almost like a wedding day. You know, it's like the guys get up in the morning and they gotta be at places, you know, around the clock, on the hour, you know, and it comes fast when it's time to hit that bus. And that's when you know it's real. You know you're going to get drafted. When all the guys load in on that bus.
Oh, boy.
The bus takes that little turn away from the hotel. You have all the camera people outside, everybody for autographs and stuff like that. And I think for that moment, for a lot of the fellas, that's when it became real. And even for the parents. Because the parents all ride the parent bus.
I see. So they got two buses that go over there. Huh? They choreograph that.
Yeah.
Now, what'd you do for duds? Did you go get a tailored suit somewhere? What'd you do? For Jalen,
well,
I mean.
Yeah. For Jalen, he went and got his custom suits made, so he looked real sharp. And a lot of people that know me, they're worried if I was going to wear a suit or not. But no, I wore a suit that night, obviously.
So now, when Jalen and Chet came onto the scene, it's been a few years for people that really follow basketball. But when was it? Were they eighth grade, ninth grade? What were people started to say? Hey, these guys got a chance playing the NBA. When did you first start hearing that talk?
For Jalen, it was about when he was in fourth grade. He left John Lucas camp. John Lucas told me that my son was pretty special, and I should get him the education and make sure the basketball stays solid.
Really?
And yeah. So that was Jalen for fourth grade. Tyrell Terry, same thing, fourth, fifth grade. And for Chet, his came a little bit later when everybody saw him in ninth grade. We were playing Mack Irvin Fire. He goes up, gets a tip dunk, comes down, probably had about 14 blocks that game. We ended up losing a tough one in overtime, but we were all younger players then. And I had a couple people come up to me in NYTLA tournament and said, hey, we think that Holmgren has a chance to be special.
You know, he's so skinny that you don't think he can do what he can do. Can you explain that to people? I mean, is he physical enough? Because you look at him and you say, kid, you got to eat and put 50 pounds of muscle on, but he doesn't get pushed around that much.
Well, I tell you, you know, most people say, you know, if you're born and raised in a city that you're going to be a little hood tough. So, he's inner city tough. You know, he's been around me and the kids for all these years, and he only knows one way how to play, and that's hard. And, the one thing I could tell you was I had a special game for him in ninth grade. He has kind of the flu, and I walked into the hotel room and I said, Chet, can you play? I could tell you was I had a special game for him in ninth grade. He has kind of the flu, and I walked into the hotel room and I said, Chet, can you play? And he said, you know, I got a fever. I don't know, coach. I said, well, put it this way, Chet. I said, you know, they always talk about Michael Jordan's flu game.
Yeah.
And I said, maybe this could just have to be your flu game on this one. But I said, if you can do it, I said, let me know. If you can't, it's okay. That day, Mike, that's when I knew that he had the internal toughness to be great.
He showed up.
He mustered up enough energy, showed up, played the game. Now, everybody in the country, Mike, said, you didn't think Holmgren played that great. But when I told him, I said, yeah, but he just had a fever the night before, and he still got up and mustered the energy to come out here and play. So I knew that he had enough in him to be special.
Now, are he and Jalen close? Did they run around the whole time? Are they in two different sides of the city? How does that work?
No, they're always together all the time. So if he made it down to Orlando, it would be a perfect fit. Those guys play so well together. So, I mean, Chet's always welcome to my house. He can go right in the house and, you know, just open the refrigerator, make a sandwich. And
careful now. A boy like that could eat a lot if he wants.
Oh, no. Even though he's tall and skinny, Chet does eat a lot. Trust me. I told the people a lot that when I go places, I always got to give him like two burger meals or something like that. He just eats around the clock.
Wow. You know, boy, don't we wish we could do that. Now, how much did Sizzle help these two playing on that circuit and playing the best of the best throughout? And not just playing it, but you guys played it with a swagger and a confidence that said, we're from Minnesota, get out of our way.
Well, what we did was I told the kids is when you play in state, you rep your area. So St. Paul or, you know, Park Center or whatever it may be.
Yeah, where the neighborhood you grew up in, right?
Yes, you rep your neighborhood. Once you get that done and you leave the state, now you represent Minnesota. You know, now you play very good out of state. Now you represent the Midwest. And then after that, you know what I'm saying, like when Jalen and Chet played on the USA team, then you represent the good old USA. So those guys have been able to hit those milestones each time that we had leveled up and went out of town and played in different events. So that's one thing, like I said, the guys have always been able to handle the pressure because they've been in the pressure cooker since they've been little kids. And Brian Sandifer's tournaments, which were our playground, gave us the ability to play four grades up all the time. So we're always playing older competitions. So going out of town was easy.
Wow, yeah, because there's a method to that. I watch it closely over the summer, and the first thing is all the kids that sign up at Sizzle get to find a team to play on, and that's great because it takes the pressure off so many of them. That's a wonderful thing off the top. Last question, NIL and this money now for name, image, likeness that you see in the college sports. Would Jalen have maybe stayed if there had been a ton of money sitting there in college for another year? And B, do you think this is good for the college game, or how do you see it?
I would say that if it was there and it was an equal opportunity where he could go to the NBA or stay, he probably would have just went to college again and then went back out.
Yep.
I do think NIL is good for everyone. I believe that we still need to write the handbook on it more. It's kind of like the Wild Wild West.
Sure is.
Everyone has a lot of we have a lot of questions as parents, and sometimes it takes a little longer for you to get the answers for it. But and eventually, I think they'll all get it down, and it'll benefit everyone.
Larry, always appreciate you, sir. Thank you so much for giving us some time. I hope I see you up here again this summer soon.
No doubt, Mike. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Okay, I thought I might. All right, thank you, buddy.
No doubt. See y'all.
You bet. Larry Sucks, his son Jalen, they lived through that. He coached him the whole way. It's all just good stuff. And what would happen? I mean, if he and Chet end up in the same team. I'm told that 30 for 30 has already called out to say, hey, we're interested in that documentary if they end up on the same NBA team, back-to-back lottery picks from the same high school. I'm just saying. More on the NIL. Some of the numbers that I've heard are just staggering that college kids are getting right now. I mean, staggering. I'll share some of that with you when we come back. Welcome back. Sports to the Max. News Talk 830 WCCO on a hot, humid night in downtown Minneapolis and beyond. Here's one more text I didn't get. Remember, I was talking before about some of the stuff I've seen in downtown Minneapolis. Here's a text I got. I work in Uptown. Man came in yesterday, no pants on. Another guy found a used crack pipe at the bus stop and came in, threw the black case in our garbage. And probably displayed for us the used crack pipe. Okay, so I'm not the only one that's seeing some of this stuff. And I'm not trying to be an alarmist. I'm not trying to say that the sky is falling. It's just different. And that's why we need things like conventions to come in here and take over the foot traffic. And God help that that everything is good in their world when they do that. We were talking about the NIL money. And some of the stuff that I have heard about this, now that teams have figured out how to use it, is breathtaking what they're doing. This is becoming a recruiting tool, first of all. So when the kids ask about NIL, they have these, now they've got people in charge of it where they go, here, we put you into a pool, we enter you into a portal, and it explains what your interests are, what you like, things like that. And then any corporation that clicks on it can find maybe there's a place where those intersect with what they do. Now you know what's going to happen. This is going to become who can come up with that best portal, that best recruiting tool, the flashiest one where you put it in there and companies are calling for your services and all these things. And this person I talked to, they said, yeah, we started, you know, $300 minimum if you want anybody to do anything for you and up. But you're going to have to do that. And pretty soon, the good student athletes are going to own the university athletic department. And where it's going to get real touchy is if there's a corporation that says, you know, we gave a bunch of money last year to your program because, you know, you wanted to build a practice facility. But you know what? We're going to give it now. We're going to spread it out and give it to some players. And the university is going to say, well, but we need to build, we need a new backboard for that. No, we don't get the bang for the buck out of that. We want players on billboards. We think that'll sell for us. I don't think that'll happen here in Minnesota because I don't think that, you know, you're better off getting a Viking or a Timberwolf or a player from the Wild or the Twins in general than you would be a Gopher in general, with the exception of maybe, you know, Gabe Stevenson's is a bit of an anomaly right now. But this thing is, there's a kid that was at a smaller Division I school, and I'm not going to say his name or the school, but I was told from a college coach that they poached him away, another school did, for $300,000. They paid $300,000 for a small Division I player to go to a bigger conference, bigger school, because they believe he's a difference maker. Another kid that I heard about had five schools bidding on him, local kid that went on to play for another school, then put himself in the transfer portal. And the last numbers that I heard were around $25,000 a month, and in a couple cases, throw in the Mercedes or the car. All legit, all above board, all playing by the rules. And so he had to choose between five different schools, and, you know, depending if it was all about money, but how much per month and what kind of ride he could get out of it. I can't explain it. It just doesn't feel right. And yet you understand that this kid's making all this money for this school. He deserves a piece of the action, right? Not just the coach or the coaches. But man, that doesn't feel right. I don't know what it is. Maybe we just all got to get used to it and grow up. When we come back, you know, Twins and Cleveland Indians, this is a series, right? Down a game. Cleveland is coming in. Let's visit with somebody that's played in the big leagues that really understands it. Media talking to media, that doesn't get it done. You talk to people that have actually been there, done that. Corey Koski joins us next on Sports to the Max.